Great. All right, so tonight we're going to talk about codependency, and I got a couple sheets for you. Someone want to do some reading? There's a little story here that I'd love to have someone read. This is a great setup for what we're going to talk about tonight. And it's a story that's in a book called Emotionally Healthy Spirituality, and he's quoting this rabbi who tells the story. So I'm right up here, and thank you for being willing to read it.
So it's both sides?
Yeah, both sides. This could give us a great visual for the codependency.
Okay, sometimes others expect too much from us, and sometimes we expect too much from others. This post illustrates this perfectly. Rabbi Edwin Friedman tells us the story of a man who had given much thought to what he wanted from life. One day the opportunity came for him to experience exactly the way of living he dreamed about. But the opportunity would only be available for a short time. It would not wait, and it would not come again. Eagerly, the man started on his journey. Each time he thought about his goal, his heart beat quicker. He came to a bridge crossing the center of the town. The bridge spans above a dangerous river. After starting across the bridge, he noticed someone coming from the opposite direction. The stranger had a rope about the length of 30 feet. Just as the two men met, the stranger said, "Pardon me, would you be so kind as to hold the end of the rope for me?" The man agreed without a thought. Before he knew it, the stranger jumped over the side of the bridge with the other end of the rope. "What are you trying to do?" he shouted to the stranger below. "Just hold tight," said the stranger. "This is ridiculous," the man thought. He began trying to haul the other man in, yet it was just beyond his strength to bring the other back to safety. Again he yelled over the bridge, "Why did you do this?" "If you let go, I will be lost," said the other. "But I cannot pull you up," said the man at the top of the bridge. "I am your responsibility," said the other. "I did not ask for it," the man said. "If you let go, I am lost," repeated the stranger. The man began to look around for help, but there was none in sight. "Maybe I can tie the rope somewhere," he thought, but there was no way to get rid of this newfound burden. "Why did you do this?" he asked again. "Don't you see what you have done? What possible purpose could you have in mind?" "Just remember," said the other, "my life is in your hands." Now the man was perplexed. He reasoned with himself, "If I let go, all my life, I will know that I let this other man die. If I stay, I risk losing momentum toward my own long sought after salvation. Either way, this will haunt me forever." As time went by, still no one came. The man became keenly aware that it was almost too late to resume his journey. If he didn't leave immediately, he wouldn't arrive in time. Finally, he devised a plan. "Listen," he explained to the man hanging below, "I think I know how to save you." He mapped out the idea. The stranger could climb back up by wrapping the rope around him, loop by loop. The rope would become shorter, but the dangling man had no interest in the idea. "I don't think I can hang on much longer," warned the man on the bridge. "You must try," appealed the stranger. "If you fail, I die." Suddenly, a new idea struck the man on the bridge. It was different and even alien to his normal way of thinking. "I want you to listen carefully," he said, "because I mean what I'm about to say." The dangling man indicated that he was listening. "I will not accept the position of choice for your life, only for my own. I hereby give back the position of choice for your own life to you." "What do you mean?" the other asked, afraid. "I mean simply, it's up to you. You decide which way this ends. I will become the counterweight. You do the pulling and bring yourself up. I will even tug some from here." He unwound the rope from around his waist and braced himself to be a counterweight. He was ready to help as soon as the dangling man began to act. "You cannot mean what you say," the other shrieked. "You would not be so selfish. I am your responsibility. What could be so important that you would let someone die? Do not do this to me. After a long pause, the man on the bridge uttered slowly, "I accept your choice." In voicing those words, he freed his hands and continued his journey over the bridge. Are you the man dangling from the rope or the man holding the rope?
Thank you. Thank you for reading that.
Somebody lost their voice, isn't it?
Yeah. What's your emotion when the guy lets go of the rope? One word.
Hug.
Hug. Okay.
I don't know. I knew what was going to happen, though, which didn't happen. Because I heard the story.
Any one word?
Where's the story? Gasp.
Shock. Okay.
As far as I understand, don't free his hands.
The man who was at the top of the bridge freed his hands.
And the other one fell?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you laugh.
The other one fell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh. Okay.
Okay, we got her.
She's shocked as well.
You know, I don't know what happened. Well, I wouldn't do that go. I'm just, okay, I want to be hanging there hard. Okay, hold on. I'm going to die here. I'll do my things and then I'll see you later. Okay,
come back.
Hold on. Stay right there.
That's a great idea, but there was nothing to tie it to.
The bridge.
Apparently, there was no way. It was a special bridge that you couldn't tie anything to. Anybody else have a count, like a word?
Freedom,
okay. All right, so we all may have a little different word that we use. Another way to get at this is to think about relationships and to think about letters. And the letter A is one that we can think about. These are dependent kind of relationships where we're leaning a little bit too far in the relationship. We have this, what I would call an unhealthy leaning, like on the capital letter A. I'm leaning so far into the other person in this relationship, if they make a move, I'm going to be off balance. Then there's the capital letter H kind of relationships where you're almost disconnected from one another. There's a person here and there's a person here, and you're connected by something. Maybe it's a marriage, or maybe it's a job, or maybe it's kids, or who knows, whatever it is. But there's so much independence in the relationship that there's basically what we would call a disconnection. There's very little emotional connection between the two people. And maybe you've seen people who are married like that, and you ask one person how their spouse is doing, and they say, I don't know, ask them, because we haven't talked in, you know, a week. Then there's what the capital letter M kind of relationship, and this is what we would call an interdependent kind of relationship. This is the one where I can stand on my own. I have my identity rooted in Christ. And so I can stand on my own. I don't need this other person to be my friend or to be my spouse or to be fill in the blank. But I choose to be in relationship with them, and I choose to be with them. So if it's a marriage, I could stand alone. I choose to be married to this person. So I'm interdependent. I'm connected with them, and I'm emotionally invested in the relationship, but not to the point that if my spouse moves just one move, I'm going to completely topple over. I have my identity rooted first in Christ. So I think this bridge illustration that we read tonight helps give us some imagery for what codependency is. It's essentially you and I holding the rope for someone else who has no desire to get back up on the bridge. And they're dangling there, either dangerously and they're in fear, or they're dangling and having a great time while we're holding their rope. And as was stated there, the question is, am I the person dangling from the bridge, or am I the person at the top of the bridge holding the rope? And I think at different points of our life, maybe we felt like we could put ourselves in either one of those categories. So from the sheet that you have in front of you on the Celebrate Recovery sheet where it says, what is codependency? We're just going to read through these together, and I'll make some comments along the way, and then we'll go into our small groups. So let's read the first one together. Ready? My good feelings about who I am stem from being loved by you. Think about a couple that get married And their idea about being together is that they really, quote unquote, need each other. And the idea in this relationship is that it's not about growth. It's not about us growing together. It's not about me growing in my faith, and that this marriage is another way for God to use to grow me into who He wants me to be. The idea is my happiness. And so if I'm not happy, then there must be something wrong with this relationship. And so that's one of the ways that we know we may be in a codependent relationship. Let's read the next one together. My good feelings about who I am stem from receiving approval from you. So I may be spending most of my time and my energy working for your approval. I may, as some people do, overcommit myself to being involved in many different things because I want approval from many different people. And so I say yes to just about everything because my way, because I want to be approved of by those people. Sometimes it's people in our family that we overcommit to because what will they think of us? Sometimes it's people at work that we overcommit to. Sometimes we overcommit ourselves. Sometimes we overcommit our time. Sometimes we overcommit our money for various projects. Sometimes we overcommit our house. You know, I know people who have a very difficult family situation going on, and then they enter in one of their family members who is maybe in recovery, or maybe they're not even really trying on their recovery, and they enter into this home and make it even more of a mess. Next one. Your struggle affects my serenity. My mental attention focuses on solving your problems or relieving your pain. So I know grandmas and I know mothers who have had children or grandchildren removed from their care or from their families, maybe it removed from their home, from DSS or Department of Children and Families, or a child is jailed or a child runs away from home, and all of a sudden this person, all of a sudden now they have no purpose in life. Their purpose was wrapped up in that child, that grandchild, that friend, that whomever. All right, next one, ready? My mental attention is focused on pleasing you. And it doesn't matter whether or not the thing that I'm trying to help you with is healthy. It may be a very unhealthy thing, but my attention is on making sure that you're pleased. And you being pleased may be completely off the market, maybe something that you should not be involved in at all, but I'm trying to please you, and that's my goal. I end up getting involved in helping you do things that I might not otherwise want to involve myself in. Next one. My mental attention is focused on protecting you, and I do this at all costs. I might put my job in jeopardy. I might put my own happiness aside, as we saw with this man who had a dream, had a vision of what he was supposed to be doing. I may put my dreams on hold. I might put my kids in some kind of jeopardy because I'm trying to help someone else. My money, just think about it. I could put everything out there for someone that I want to protect. And I might try to keep them from getting in trouble, maybe with the law or at work. I might call in and say, you know, my spouse is sick, when they're really not sick. They just stay up all night, gambling on the computer or drinking or whatever. But I'm trying to protect this person. In the process of protecting them, I'm enabling them to do things that they shouldn't be doing. Next one. My self-esteem is bolstered by relieving your pain. So now I start to feel really good whenever I can keep you from being in pain. And so my self-esteem is attached to you being in pain. So as long as you're in pain and I can relieve that pain, then I can feel good about myself. So now you can see that we're in this pattern. And it's not a healthy pattern for me, and it's not a healthy pattern for you. But nonetheless, it's this thing that's just going to keep working itself over and over and over in our lives if we don't change it. Next one is about hobbies and interests. Ready? My own hobbies and interests are put aside. My time is spent sharing your interests and hobbies. And I'm not doing this out of love because I want to spend time with you necessarily. A lot of times I'm doing this because I feel obligated to. So I'm going to set aside all the things that I love. I'm not going to ask you to be involved in my things because I'm just going to put myself into what you're doing, even though in the end I may become resentful that I had to do all those things and you didn't do any of the things that I wanted to do. Next one's about clothing and personal appearance. Ready? Your clothing and personal appearance are dictated by my desires as I feel you are a reflection of me. So I harp on you. So I nag you. And I'm in fear of what others are going to think of you and what you look like because I am so connected to you. And one of the words we use in psychology is enmeshment. I don't know where I begin and you end. We're so connected that if there's something going on with your appearance and I don't like it, I have to say something because I don't want someone to see you and for that to reflect back on me. Next one is behaviors. Your behavior is dictated. Your behavior, ready? Your behavior is dictated by my desires as I feel you are a reflection of me. Very similar to the last one. So when you don't behave the way that I want you to behave, again, I might nag you about that. I might speak to you about that. Next one. I am not aware of how I feel. I am aware of how you feel. If you ask someone who is struggling with codependency how they're doing, they'll start telling you, and before long, they'll start telling you how the person is doing that they are codependent with. And the conversation will revolve around that person for the next however long you let them keep talking. And they keep recycling what's going on with this other person because it's so entwined with who they are and what's going on in their lives at that moment because they're in a codependent relationship. Next one. I am not aware of what I want. I ask what you want. I am not aware. I assume. So again, this goes back to the idea of enmeshment, that I really don't have any wants or I hide the things that I want. And that I'm leaning so heavily towards you that it's all about what you want. It's all about what you desire. And I'm not putting out there what I'm interested in. And for many people, what happens is this bitterness and resentment builds up because my needs aren't being addressed. My needs aren't being met. And eventually, what usually happens is we get to a breaking point and we say, enough of this. And either we begin to share what it is we need in the relationship and begin to change the patterns, or we just bolt and say, I'm out of here because this person clearly doesn't have my needs and my best interests in mind. Next one's about dreams. Ready? The dreams I have for my future are linked to you. So if you're not there, I don't have a future because my dreams and my future are so connected to who you are and what you're doing. So if you're removed from the picture for whatever reason, all of a sudden now I have nothing to move forward with. I have no future, no hope. The fear of rejection. Ready? My fear of rejection determines what I say or do. So I don't want to say things or do things, certain things, because I don't want to be rejected. So there are certain things I'm not going to say. I may not put my opinion out there. I may not try to correct you if you're wrong. Or I may not try to bring up the fact that you might be wrong and that others might see it a different way. In reality, what I'm doing is I'm being rejected by you just about all the time. I've seen this in relationships where the one spouse is constantly being rejected by the other spouse. Just in the way that the other person acts. They might be drinking. They might be staying out late. They might be calling and not saying they're coming home. And almost every week, almost every day, there's a rejection of the other spouse say, I don't really care what you want. I'm going to go do these other things that I want to do. But then when I'm talking to a person who's the codependent one, and I talk to them about that, there's this thing that comes up in this fear of being rejected. I'm not going to push the envelope on them staying out all night or them drinking or them doing whatever it is that they're doing, because ultimately, if I push that, then the person is going to say, I don't want to be in relationship with you. They're going to leave me. They're going to reject me. And I'd rather have, you know, those little tiny slices of the knife every day than this severing of the relationship totally. But it's kind of a twisted way of looking at it, because I fear being rejected ultimately, but every day I get rejected by the person and by their behavior and their attitudes. My fear of your anger. Ready? My fear of your anger determines what I say or do. So if you want to control me, all you have to do is talk a little louder. All you have to do is stomp your foot, punch a hole in the wall, whatever it is, the way that you you express your anger. If you do that, I'm likely to just comply with whatever it is you want, because I'm afraid of you. And so I say certain things and I do certain things to kind of stay within the boundaries, to not get you riled up. I read the story of the man who wrote this book in which the bridge illustration was written. His name is Peter Scazzaro. He's a pastor in Queens, New York. And he talks about how his wife often would ask him if she could go away for a weekend or a week during the summer. She loved being by the water. And her parents, if I remember the story correctly, lived by the water. And all she wanted to do was take her kids to go there for the weekend or go there for the week. And Peter was a pastor of a church, and it was a growing church. And he was really afraid of what people would say if his wife was gone for a weekend and wasn't there for church or was gone for a few weeks. And what would it look like? What would people say? And all that. So his way of dealing with it was he just raised his voice, just like the people did in his family growing up. He raised his voice. He came up with all the reasons that she shouldn't go. He even used God and said, you know, and brought up the church thing and brought up, you know, aren't we supposed to be together? And he basically brought out every kind of manipulative tool he could to try to get her not to go down. Of course, summer after summer after summer of hearing this, eventually, kind of going back to this, of the fear of rejection or the anger, for a long time, that anger kept her from doing the things that she really wanted to do, the things that brought life to her. And one day, you know, she just came to him and said, I'm leaving your church. I'm not going to attend your church anymore. And that began the process of healing in their relationship. But this just reminded me of that. He used anger to try to manipulate her, to keep her from doing things that he didn't want her to do. Next one. I use giving as a way of feeling safe in our relationship. In that kind of relationship where someone gets angry, it's easy for me to just say, fine, I'm just going to give. I'm just going to do whatever it is you want to do, because that's safe for me. If I do what you want me to do and I'm under your control, then there aren't any waves, and this is safe for me. But if I stand up for myself and I say, you know, I really want to go to the beach, and you know what? I'm an adult. I'm going taking the children and going to the beach, and you're going to have to figure out what you're doing with yourself for the weekend or whatever. Then now it's not safe. Peter's going to chase his wife, Jerry, you know, to the car as she's packing and yelling at her, and it's going to be a big scene. So it's just easier for Jerry to say, you know what, I'm just going to stay in this. I have to serve the church. I have to serve Jesus. I have to serve my husband. And so she begins to do things not out of a heart of really out of worship, but really out of obligation that this is what she's supposed to do. This is what a good wife does. Social circles, next one. My social circle diminishes as I involve myself with you. So this one means that I become isolated. In that story I just told you, Jerry is a little bit more disconnected from her family because she's not allowed to go visit as much as she would like to and as much as her family would love to have her there. So now Jerry becomes more enmeshed in her relationship with Peter because she's not saying, standing up for what she really wants in the relationship. And so now what happens is other people start to see this in a relationship. They, from the outside, they see you and I and what we might, how we might be interacting, and then they might back off. Think about family members who might back off a little bit because they know that, that our spouse gets angry, and so they're not going to maybe invite us over as much as they might otherwise. And so people might start to back off of us because they see the dysfunction in our family or in our lives, and so they back off. So then that creates even more isolation. Next one. I put my values aside in order to connect with you. So I'm denying who I really am. My values are core to who I am and core to how I normally live life. But when I'm in a codependent relationship, I start to deny who I really am and what my values are so that I can be accepted in this particular relationship. Second to last one. I value your opinion and way of doing things more than my own. So I allow you to control things, even though it might create great messes. It might create great havoc and chaos in my life, things that I might have to clean up later. But I allow you to do that because your opinion, your way outweigh what I want and what I want to say. And the last one, the quality of my life is in direct relation to the quality of yours. So going back to that A relationship, if I'm heavily too enmeshed with the person next to me and their quality of life starts to change, then mine is going to change as well. So this is just a quick snapshot, I think, of what codependence is. There's some other things that we could bring out in other weeks when we might focus on this. Any questions about any of this stuff?
The last one especially reminded me of a saying that goes around a lot. If mama ain't happy, there ain't no one happy.
Mm-hmm.
That
one
is it. Yeah, at one point you said, you know, the wife did this, she thinks she's supposed to be serving her husband, she's supposed to be serving the church, you know, this is what God wants, and she keeps doing that, and she keeps doing that, and she keeps doing that. And then, I mean, how do you get out of that thinking that's what God wants?
How do you get out of that?
Yeah.
I don't know. She wrote a book about it, so maybe we should get the book and put it back there.
Do you have the book?
It just came out. I just saw it. I think it talks about how she broke that cycle in her family. So I told you, she basically showed up one day to her husband and told him she was leaving his church. And she separated herself from him for a period of time, and that got his attention. For 2 years, she kept bringing things up about how they had lived their lives for the last 8 or 9 years, and nothing was changing. And one day, it just came to a head, and she wasn't, you know, nasty about it. She just plainly said, she didn't, you know, make him feel, you know, belittle him. She just said, I'm leaving. And that, you know, that was the beginning of, you know, healing, as that got his attention over the course of the preceding months. So, but I don't know the intricacies. I mean, I think there was a book back there that we had on the table called Emotionally Healthy Spirituality, and I think that talks about a lot of the things that they both learned through the process. Mm-hmm. But she just wrote another book to explain her perspective more on what she learned through it. Any questions?
Well, what do you call someone that keeps doing something? I mean, they just keep abuse, and they think, oh, you know, it's no big deal. You can just, you know, they expect the other person to just, what if the person just has to continue to allow all this to happen and starts to think, you know, well, it's just something else and just push it under the rug?
The person's being hurt?
Yeah.
Is it hard to watch someone, that happening to someone? Is that where you're coming from? Or if you're the person?
If you're the person.
Yeah. You know, sometimes it takes a crisis before we realize that we're in that place. I mean, when you're holding that rope for somebody, I mean, that's the way you see it. You see yourself holding the rope for somebody. You realize that if you let them go, they may, something bad may happen to them. But I think when you come, it's when you come to that place where you say, like the guy in the story did, this is your choice. You chose to give me the rope. You chose to jump over the bridge. And you're choosing not to come back up. So don't make this about me and whether or not I'm going to hold the rope for you. I may have agreed to hold the rope, but I didn't understand what that meant. And now I do. So you have your last chance. You can come up, but it's your choice. I think it's when, I think it was, you know, for someone like Jerry, is when she realized that her husband was making the choice to live outside of boundaries, to live outside of, and to be using religion and God as a wedge and as a power stick in the relationship. She realized that was his choice, and she had a choice.
But she must have been sick herself. Because it's not just a clear cut, oh, you're doing something wrong, I'm leaving, you know.
Right.
It's
got to
be something that's constantly always when you start to realize.
Right, there was 8 years of her probably not, you know, and I don't know the story intricately, but there may have been 8 or 9 years of her not speaking up. And they talk about 2 years where she did bring these things to attention. So I think it's when we come to that point where we say, this is really that person's choice, and I am going to let go of the rope. And other people may say, I can't believe you did that, whatever that is. But we have to know in our hearts that it was that person's decision to be doing what they're doing, and it's not that we didn't want to help them, we gave them chances. Anybody else? Question about
the A one, and you said when someone leans very heavily.
It's usually both people on the A, it's usually both people. One person is leaning in a codependent way, the other person is playing their role of.
Yeah, so neither one of them is helping.
Correct.
So the only way to fix that is to put a boundary.
Yeah, and sometimes
you have to recognize it.
Yeah.
You may not recognize it.
In this case, these two people separated, they were able to work, get some sense of what their issues were, and then probably went to counseling and got some help through some of those things with somebody that, you know, could help them through an objective party. But yeah, we're really talking about two people who are struggling.
Because they both have weaknesses, and as I've read it, I'm thinking, well, I can see the husband doing this. But my goodness, the wife is doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're both codependent on each other.
Yeah. And as my wife tells our kids when they're arguing, someone has to drop the ball. It's like one child antagonizes the other and throws the ball, antagonism ball, then the other one throws it back and they keep throwing it back. And so someone has to drop the ball. And that's why I love this story about what Jerry did, because she said, I'm not playing this game anymore. This isn't working for our family. And she stopped throwing the ball. And can you imagine how she was judged by a lot of the people around her? I can only imagine. But it was a courageous thing to do, and I think their story definitely, you know, helps me think about these things.